So today I'm drinking tea with Kathy in Sussex, and we'll find out where I first met her in just a moment. So the first question though, Kathy, is do you drink tea?
Absolutely. Right now, as you can see, and quite often through the day.
I have to say, I have been offered a really nice, steady stream of tea all the way through my visit so far. It's been really, really good. It's really nice tea as well.
Oh, good.
So what's your favourite sort of tea?
Well, mostly I drink decaf, which I'm afraid is what you're drinking now. You may not have spotted that.
I hadn't noticed yet.
I can find you some caffeine if you need it later.
No, because the tea volume is quite high, so we're probably okay on that one. As well, yes.
So everyday tea is a supermarket normal. Sometimes Earl Grey is rather nice, sometimes Lapsang, but I haven't had that for a while. And one of the leading supermarkets do a particularly nice spiced orange tea when I want to go fruity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have had somebody suggesting orangey tea before. In fact, I had an orangey tea with Neil. So, I was trying to remember this. When did we first meet?
Yeah, I was trying to think of that one as well. Probably when it was my third year of university, when I had to do a year out. And so you'd been at university in Edinburgh.
Yep.
And there was some tenuous link between someone I knew, mm-hmm, and someone Ian knew that meant I ended up staying in what should have been Ian's flat's dining room for a week or two, yeah, before I found somewhere to live.
Yes. I have a vague recollection of coming to meet you at the station with a bicycle and luggage.
Quite possibly. I did have a bicycle for a while, and then all those cobbled streets kind of threw that rather.
Yes, you stayed in their box room, didn't you?
Yeah, just for a week or two, or maybe a month. It wasn't a huge length of time. And then I found somewhere, maybe McNeil Street. I think the other end of Princes Street. By then we were all quite good friends. So it meant I could come and join in all the student stuff.
Was it a Methodist society link, or possibly
it might well have been. It may
like
well
that.
Have been MethSoc.
Yes.
I was part of that in Bradford, which was my core university, and then Edinburgh, and then various other places as well.
So the question which I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
That's an interesting one. I don't feel I've got anything particularly profound to say on that one.
That's okay.
I don't think Christianity is dying. I think maybe we're not as visible as we could be. I think within the churches, certainly the church I go to, it's very dynamic within the church. The Sunday mornings are great. But maybe we're not very good about shouting out about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes there's so much in the media that feels anti-Christian that it's quite hard to put your head over the parapet and say, actually, I am, and this is important to me. Mm. But that said, in my working life, it's being a Christian that supports me and means I can do what I do. That's where my security comes. That's where I don't do my job in my strength. I do it in God's strength. Mm-hmm. And there are some people in my profession I can be very open about that with. Mm-hmm. And others that I'm slightly more hesitant with. So sleeping, hiding a little bit maybe, but not dying.
Mm-hmm. Going back to those heady days in Edinburgh, what's the most fun that we have had together, which is broadcastable?
Now, interestingly, a friend of mine said that my response to that should be to ask you, perhaps not on radio, can you remember what fun we had that wasn't broadcastable? But my most fun memories of then are probably the Kayleys. Mm. Sprung floor, the potentially burn tonight.
Yes.
But that's where I probably really fell in love with Kayleys, because I don't know if we did do a lot of them. But
we did a few.
We did quite a few, and compared to being in an English university, we did more. And the music's probably better, and the calling was good. And it was just a whole lot of fun.
I have a memory of us doing a basket with somebody, and
yes.
I think it might have been Ian and Tim.
I think if you and I were there, it probably was Ian and Tim.
And I think because we're not so very different in height, but they're quite a bit bigger
than us.
They're
quite tall. We flew quite well.
We flew quite well.
Yes.
I have quite a distinct memory of the basket. I have no memory of where that particular basket was, but definitely Kayleys.
Mm.
Yeah, as for non-broadcastable fun, I wonder if it might have had something to do with my husband's homemade wine at that point, but maybe we should gloss over that quite quickly. So the next question is about what different responses do you get from people about your role as a stay-at-home mum? But you might want to expand on what your role actually kind of is a bit, or you may not want to.
I think it was always really important to me to be a stay-at-home mum, because my mum is, or well, I suppose is, was. She does a lot of volunteering, but she stayed at home when we were children. And so that always felt very natural to me to do. I really enjoyed the stuff I studied at university. I really enjoyed the work I did, archaeology degree and then conservation, but it never felt forever. And having children was more important, I suppose. But I've never been just a stay-at-home mum. I don't like that phrase anyway, because there's always been guiding, there's been work with, there's been volunteering with the church, there's always been other things as well. I know one friend who probably should have known better, said to me some years ago, "Kathy, do you work?" And I'm afraid my response at that point was, "Yes, I do, very hard, but no one pays me." I think her subtext was, "Could I go and do some volunteering with her?" But that was a bit of a sore moment in a way.
Somebody, I was live on Radio Wiltshire, and somebody raised the comment when I was with them of actually, why are we making such a fuss that an unemployed woman has just had another baby, talking about the new royal baby. And I'm just like, I had no idea what to do. And then I was like, I'd like that person to go and suggest to some other mum of three that they don't have a job.
Yes. Yes, you'd like them to actually look at what that mother actually does.
Mm.
And she's doing so much for those children, and she's probably running the house as well. And she's probably looking after her husband if she's lucky enough to have one, or she's running the whole house single-handedly, which is an amazing thing to do.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's a lot to being a mum, and it's never just a mum.
No. Do you get people expecting you to return to paid work in a different way? Do you think there's an expectation of that, or do you think people have kind of got beyond that?
I think probably a lot of people do. I think it's quite hard when I'm at toddler groups, that people will ask people what they do. We still define ourselves by our work too much. Or we define ourselves by everybody else around us. So if you're a toddler group, you're not yourself, you're the child's mum. But then the conversation will often turn around, and even women in a toddler group will start to think about who they were before children, who they are as well as their children. And forget that their prime role is being with that child, and for the child, they are the star in the sky almost. Mm. I think now we're fostering, people see that as my role, and therefore don't expect me to do other things, because they do understand that that's quite a big role in itself. But for me, that goes alongside my being a mum.
Mm-hmm.
And because I do one, I can do the other.
Yeah. I have to admit that I find people who manage to foster, I think they're awesome, because it is such a complex role at the moment, with the way that most fostering arrangements work.
Mm.
So the next question is about girl guiding.
Funnily enough, it has funnily come up enough. In the
why do you think it's important that girl guiding remains a female-only organisation while scouting is mixed?
The first answer to that is because that's what the girls want. And that regularly, maybe even as much as every 5 years, Girl Guiding has polled a large number of the members. And all the members, all the figures from those polls come out that the girls want girls only. It can be slightly lower for the younger girls, the rainbows who are 5 to 7. Always more than half want to be girl only. By the time you get to the guide age, which you might think are when the girls want to be with the boys, and you're talking sort of 10 to 14, 15, 16, are adamant that they enjoy that girl-only space. I think for us in guiding, it's really important to give girls just some time in their lives when they can just be children, because they're much less self-conscious in a girl-only space, so they can have all sorts of fun experiences without looking over their shoulder at what impact they're having on them for everybody else. And I think for me, the girls have actually got the best of both worlds, because if the girls want girl-only space, they can come to guiding. If they want to be mixed, they can go to scouting. And I, probably like lots of other guiding, wish that scouting had even more facility to run boy-only groups as well as their mixed groups, because then both boys and girls would have that choice.
Yeah, because we have mixed scouts. We're all in our family involved in a big mixed scouting group.
And there's so much good that both groups do, and so much adventure the children can have.
And that's worked really well for us, and I see that. But when we went to Mauritius quite a few years ago, when I was Brown Owl,
Browning Pack,
yes, we went to visit the guides there, and they were explaining how their work as girls was a lot to do with sort of female empowerment, and their girl guiding in Mauritius was given funds from the UN to work with the girls.
Yes,
specifically.
Yes,
as to do with a kind of wider women's issues across the world.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought about that aspect of it before I went, and I thought that's really powerful stuff for these girls.
And it doesn't sit well with every leader in this country, but girl guiding is becoming much more of an advocate voice for girls, and that's almost part of the agenda now. That some of the projects in girl guiding in the UK and worldwide are more about listening to girls' voices, supporting girls. And in some cultures, girl guiding is really recognised, because there are some cultures where obviously the boys and girls culturally don't mix, and therefore something like girl guiding allows the girls to have a social group because it's safe within their culture, and that's another aspect of it.
I've only just thought of this question.
That's okay.
But it ties in. It's to do with this kind of change about how girls understand themselves to be. So do you see any sort of implications from the Me Too type movements in your girls that you're working with already? Do they talk about it? Do they think about that? Is that something that comes up?
I'm not sure if I've heard of Me Too movements.
So about kind of the whole standing up to the people like Harvey Weinstein and all those sorts of things, the kind of actual gathering together of women to say that sexual assault is wrong. Is that something that your guides talk about or think about, do you think? Or are yours younger?
It's not something I've been aware of my guides, but my own guide group are quite young at the moment. I've got a lot of new girls. I've got a lot of 10, 11, 12-year-old girls. Girl Guiding does run a peer education programme now, where they're training sort of 14, 15, 16-year-olds to deliver sessions to the younger girls. And there are some things there. There's a scheme called Think Resilient, which is encouraging the teens to help the young girls think about mental health. I can't remember what the name of the scheme. There are some schemes to try and help the girls think about healthy relationships, to unbalance the power in relationships and sort of boyfriend-girlfriend type conversations. So I think things like that are starting to be talked about, but perhaps more with the older girls. But if it's where it can be that the older girls are peer mentoring the slightly younger ones, then it becomes relevant to them. So that's perhaps something that's coming in rather than avert at the moment.
So the last question for today is, what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Now that one I really had to think about. From this evening's meal, certainly toffee sauce.
It was very nice toffee sauce.
It was rather good, wasn't it? Sorry I didn't make it though. Because my normal favourite things like campfires and outdoors. I thought, well, maybe it's tents. Maybe it's being in a tent, because that starts with a T.
Maybe tents. Well, I had a long tent discussion with somebody recently who'd just bought a new tent.
Ooh.
So we had lots of tents.
That can be very long discussions.
So do you take your guys camping under canvas?
Absolutely. Yes, most recently we did something called Sparkle and Ice, which was run at one of the local centres for guiding, and that was in February. So we did wake up with ice on our tents, and the guides had an amazing time.
Yes, all the rest of my family went to the Scout winter camp at Gilwell Park, and I didn't. I stayed at home. That's my little weekend.
Peace and quiet.
Where I don't have to go to Gilwell Park. They offer every year, would you like to come to winter camp? Funnily enough, I'll stay at home.
Yes, as is the Blacklands, and they did one at Foxley's, I think at Waddo as well. So as three different centres. But yeah, it's actually quite warm. I think we just all wore so many layers.
Yeah, the worst winter camps, I think, are the ones which are really muddy.
Yeah, Blacklands was. It was distinctly, yeah.
And that's the thing where actually there's I have three family members coming home with mud throughout all their camping kit all at once.
Yes,
I have quite a lot of mud attack.
Quite a long queue for the bath, I think. Yes, I was quite lucky that only three of my daughters came to that camp. So only four of us under canvas, not six or seven as sometimes happens.
Yes, keeping the mud under control.
It does a bit.
So that's the end of our questions. So thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
It's lovely to see you.
Not do this along next time.
Absolutely.